Hi everyone, it's your host Amy Geckel, and we are here with entry 19 of the Eating Disorder Diaries. I hope you guys are doing well. I've officially kicked off my holiday season over here. I actually put up my Christmas decorations on the night of Halloween, and I know that's actually, what do you call that? A party foul? You can't do that, but I have an excuse. I'm only going to be in my house or my apartment for 2 more weeks this year. Even less than that by the time this episode comes out. But for the rest of the year, my fiance and I are packing up our dogs and making a cross-country road trip. And we're going to go hang with family for the rest of the year. We are spending Thanksgiving at his parents' house, and he's flying back home after that for a few weeks. And I'm going to drive onwards to Florida to go hang with my retired parents for a month. And then Brendan will come back for Christmas, and then we'll drive back to Denver. I did this 2 years ago, and it was amazing. December in Florida is unmatched, and it just feels like with me getting married next year, we're going to be so busy. I'm not going to get as many chances to pick up and drive across the country anymore, so I just figured, let me do it again now. I will be recording while I'm there, so stay tuned. But anyways, right now I'm in the middle of taking a break from setting up a fondue night with my friends. It's Saturday. They're coming over in a few hours, and we're going to do some meat-based fondue tonight. Super excited. We have beef, shrimp, and chicken, and like 10 to 12 different sauces to dip things in. This is a tradition that I do with my family each year. We do it on Christmas Eve. And when we do it, we start with cheese fondue, and we'll dip things like apples and toasted bread. And the cheese has wine in it, which makes it taste so good. And then the next course is the meat fondue, and that's what I'm doing with my friends tonight, you know, with the beef. We also add potatoes in there. But my dad, hi dad, is the sauce master. He brings out like 20 different sauces, and they're all labeled and color-coded, and it's just the thing I look forward to the most on Christmas Eve. And then, of course, we end with chocolate fondue and dip, like, marshmallows and bananas, fruits, the whole shebang. It's so good. And since I won't be seeing my friends over the holiday season, this kind of makes it feel like a Christmassy holiday gathering, so I'm excited. We're going to put on Christmas music, Christmas movies, sweats. It'll be a good night. It's literally November 4th. But I mean, guys, it's Christmas season, right? I'll keep you posted on how it goes. However, this leads me to talk about the main subject in today's episode. Obviously, you can tell from the title, we're going to talk about bulimia. If you've been listening to the podcast, you know that I suffered from bulimia for 16 years. And now that I'm at a point of recovery, I want to share what I've learned because I don't want anyone to go through what I went through. It is a hell of a disease, and it took up my entire life at one point. I had a really disordered relationship with food. I couldn't enjoy fondue or meals with people that I loved. And I'm in such a different headspace now that I think it's so important to talk about, which is why I'm very excited to have on our special guest today. Her name is Angela McGill. Angela is a holistic nutritionist who specializes in cognitive and mental health, and today she's here to tell her story about how she found recovery from bulimia after suffering for 18 years. I can really relate to her, and I learned a lot from her, so if you're someone who is suffering from an eating disorder, specifically bulimia, I think you'll get a lot of benefit out of this episode. Before we get into my conversation with Angela, I wanted to take a step back and define what bulimia is. According to Johns Hopkins Medicine, bulimia is an eating disorder. It is characterized by uncontrolled episodes of overeating called binging. This is followed by purging by self-induced vomiting, misuse of laxatives, and other methods. According to the Eating Disorders Coalition, about one person dies every hour as a direct result of an eating disorder. I have cited ANAD articles in my first few entries, but to put emphasis on a few statistics, gay men are 12 times more likely to report purging than heterosexual men. Hispanic people are significantly more likely to suffer from bulimia than their non-Hispanic peers. The most common type of eating disorders among military members is bulimia, and this is just to name a few. But there's a lot that is not touched on in these definitions and statistics. And in my personal experience, I found that you can really only get to know the experience one can go through when you hear it firsthand. And you also feel hope when you realize maybe they went through something similar to something you've gone through and they've come out on the other side. Last thing before we get into the interview, Angela and I do talk about sensitive content. So please take care when listening. But without further ado, let's hear from Angela in Entry 19. Here's what you need to know about bulimia. You're listening to Entry 19 of the Eating Disorder Diaries with Amy Yeckel featuring Angela McGill, and we'll be back right after this break. On the outside, you have it all together. You're successful. You seem happy. But what your friends and family don't see is that you're living in the vicious cycle of bulimia. You know something needs to change. Your health depends on it. But you just don't know where to start. That's where Conquering Bulimia comes in. It's a one-of-a-kind online recovery course brought to you by certified eating disorder coaches Sarah Lee and Merritt Elizabeth. They know exactly what you're going through. They've both recovered from bulimia and have teamed up with leading experts to create an online course with over 70 short videos to jumpstart your recovery. Conquering Bulimia is private and self-paced, filled with personal stories and coaching tips that will teach you how to change your behaviors for good. And it's affordable, offered at an incredible discount of 60% of the cost of one-on-one coaching. Break free from bulimia on your terms and start living the life of peace you deserve at conqueringbulimia.com. Welcome back to Entry 19 of the Eating Disorder Diaries. You might hear some weird audio from me. It lasts like 30 seconds and then gets better, so it does not last the whole episode. But here's Angela. Angela McGill, welcome to the Eating Disorder Diaries.
Thanks, Amy.
Your story resonated a lot with me because we both have suffered from bulimia for over half of our lives and are now on the other side in recovery. And today you are a holistic nutritionist and really taking your recovery in stride. And I just want to hear more. You could start at the beginning of, you know, when you were struggling up into where you are today. What's your story look like?
My God, it feels like my entire life story that I'm about to like unleash on your entire audience. And I don't, if you have questions as I go through it, ask, because I don't want to skip over anything. I want it to be as important for me to tell the story as it is important for people to that want to hear it. So I would say my issues with food kind of began when I was like 13 or 14. At this point in time, I wasn't engaging in like bulimic behaviors. I was definitely soothing myself through food where like I would come home from school and like, you know, 3 o'clock, you're on your own, your parents are still at work. And I would, you know, grab anything in the cupboard that I could find for an after school snack, whether that was like a bag of chips, 2 bags of chips, and like 2 liters of pop. Like it was like kind of off the rail. So I would say I definitely had issues with binge eating that I don't really identify with as much as I identify with the bulimia. And then, but the two are so co-linked that you can't really untangle them. And then obviously, you know, I'm in my teenage years, I'm a teenage girl, and I'm like, of course, I gained a lot of weight when I was 14 and 15. So interestingly enough, I'll add this little anecdote. I'm at the same weight that I was when I was 15, but my body shape has changed as I age and as I exercise. So the weight doesn't really mean anything. That's kind of what I learned from that looking back. But obviously at the time I was like trying to desperately lose this weight. And I had tried exercising. I tried anything I could think of, kind of somewhat restricting my food. And then it wasn't until I was 18, almost 19, when I engaged in my first bulimic behavior. And that was kind of like the biggest relief that I have ever had. And for the next 18 years, it continued very steadily. So there wasn't really a pause in it. I just continued. Like there were some days where it was obviously worse than others and some weeks where it was better. Maybe it was just once a week versus like every day, or I hate to say this, but like 5 times a day. That could have been like when it was at its peak. And it wasn't until I was in my mid-30s that, like, I had tried over the years to, like, help myself in ways, like, maybe if I try, you know, the paleo diet or the keto diet or some sort of whatever outside thing that social media or the new fad was, right? Like, maybe if I try that, that will help my issue. But what I wasn't addressing was the underlying causes, which were like the anxiety and the depression. So all of these like quick fixes to try and do it on my own were definitely not working. And like I said, it wasn't until my mid-30s that I actually got the help that I needed. And it was like, I had a breakdown to breakthrough moment, like really a breakdown to breakthrough moment. My husband, like, we were actually married at the time. We were married for about 2 years. And he, obviously, I had tried my best to hide it. You know, you like think you're hiding things, and I'm using that in quotes, but like it's evident when it's like in your house, it's happening around you. He just was like, he'd left me this like note with separation papers and said, like, I'm leaving you. And by the way, you can keep the cat.
Wow.
And so I immediately called him when I like came home to these papers, and he was like, I'm going to summarize our conversation, but he was like, will you get help? Will you change? And I said, yes. But his fear, and I guess the reason he did it, like this is us talking after, was he thought that I was going to say no. So I think when I said yes, that was such a relief to him. So he ended up coming back home and we like worked through it. And I ended up getting a therapist that I worked with one-on-one, but that was like the very beginning because my journey to healing was not perfect and it was definitely not linear. I went through a ton of ups and downs. I went through a ton of different therapy tools. So I tried the one-on-one therapy, which I found really isolating because it was just almost someone like I felt like was dictating to me. I tried working with a medical professional who had recommended anti-anxiety medication at the time. And I was like, no, that doesn't really jive with me. I don't feel like I want, you know, something external to change my mood. I want something that, like, I want to change my mood myself.
Yeah.
And then I tried group therapy. That was probably the one with the most success. And at the same time I did group therapy, I had also enrolled in nutrition school. So it was really an intuitive enrollment for me. I was like working with a chiropractor. She was working on my shoulder and she was telling me about the nutrition school that she was in and what she was learning, and why she went in was to help people heal from inflammatory issues, chronic pain and stuff through food. And it was like, that was my first taste of somebody saying that food was healing.
Mm.
Not food was bad. Food needed to be controlled or constricted, but food was healing. And that's really what I learned in this nutrition program, is all about how food was healing. So while I was doing all of the other tools in the background, like the helping with the anxiety and the depression, really integrating that piece into my life really helped me. And I would say, like, I was always drawn to food. Like, even when I was younger, I was drawn to food. Like, I was curious about it. I loved cooking. I loved baking. It was like an expression of love for me to like give someone this like beautiful plate of food. So it was definitely authentic to me as a human being to like find my healing through food.
I love that you have been able to share the different tools that you used, because we need to realize how many freaking tools it takes to get to a point of recovery from starting slow, starting with therapy, knowing things aren't linear. Group therapy, I've said, really, really has helped me too. I haven't gone to group therapy, actually. I've gone to just support groups, but having almost like a camaraderie of a group of people who have been through it themselves when perhaps your therapist has not really makes an impact. And then on top of that, learning about the nutrition behind your food and using food as a tool. We all need food. Of course we do. Using food to help you heal from your eating disorder. almost feels counterintuitive, does it not? But it makes complete sense. Of course, we should be doing that. And that's something that I really want to learn more about. So let me pick your brain since you've studied this. I want to learn about, I guess, links between nutrition or even lack thereof and eating disorders. Why don't we start there? What have you learned about that?
I think this is like the biggest aha moment I've ever had was just getting my hands on all of these different books. They have a course in the nutrition program I took, which was specifically nutrition for mental health. And I was like, you know, jumped on that and was just all over it and like picked up every book that I could find about that topic. To this day, I'm still collecting books on the topic. But there have been several studies that have been published by several well-known doctors. One of the most forefront ones is Dr. Campbell McBride. She's the author of The GAPS Protocol. And that's probably one of the first books I read. And in that, she talks about the lack of nutrients that cause eating disorders. But obviously, before I go into some of the potential nutrient deficiencies, I want to preface that I don't think you can attribute one thing to causing an eating disorder. There are so many causes. And one of them could be nutrient deficiencies, right? Sure. A lack of nutrients, for instance, such as like studies have really shown that zinc and B9, which is we know as folate, have been implicated in causing eating disorders. In particular, zinc, which is a trace element. So it's involved in a lot of biological processes, including brain function. So it's really crucial for neural transmission and activity. And altered levels of zinc in the body have been linked to several mental health issues, not just eating disorders. So it's been linked to depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, and bipolar. Other nutrient deficiencies that may be attributed to eating disorders are omega-3, magnesium, and B vitamins. So omega-3, magnesium, and B vitamin deficiencies can cause anxiety and depression, which if you suffer from anxiety and depression, that can exacerbate eating disorder behaviors or even kind of tip the scales to leading to one. In fact, one of the first instances where I started getting more mental clarity was when a naturopathic doctor recommended for me to take a B complex. I'm sure if being nutrient deficient tipped me over the edge to engage in bulimic activities, like I'm not 100% positive that it did. Mm-hmm. I can speculate that it might have been because my diet wasn't exactly nutrient dense as a kid. But I can definitely say that my eating disorder led to nutrient deficiencies. And so through supplementation and using that, it helped my body and gave it what it needed to kind of like, you know, support my body with nutrients to make it alive in a way, you say, and also helped clear the fog from my brain.
Oh my gosh, the brain fog. I feel like I had that the entire time that I was suffering. And it's funny that you say, you know, as kids or young adults, even we don't really have the best nutrition, or at least that was my case growing up. I know we talked offline before this, but you know, we grew up with a certain diet, and was I sometimes sent to school with fruit by the foot for breakfast? I sure was. So I didn't really have a completely balanced diet as a kid. And then I introduced the eating disorder behaviors into my life. And of course, by then my nutrition was all out of whack. So now I don't know religiously what I should be taking, but I do take vitamins, and I might just grab something off the shelf, whether it's a probiotic or a B or even biotin for my hair, you know. And I'm trying to take as many vitamins as I can, but I think I want to learn more about how they can impact you. And it seems like if you're deficient in a lot of these, it really can exacerbate your eating disorder symptoms or mental health symptoms, like you said. And I don't know, just in general, it feels like food has this healing property, or many healing properties. I read about juices all the time. How is beet juice good for you, for example, that kind of thing. And I know celery juice in the morning is all the craze, and I am definitely on that bandwagon sometimes, but I don't actually know what it's doing for me other than I have less brain fog. Sometimes I notice when I'm really taking my vitamins and eating much more healthy and more structured, I guess where I'm going with this is, tell me more about, you know, what foods we should be eating. I'm hearing omega-3s, I'm thinking salmon, and also even just herbs and everything. What are the links with food and healing properties and even spiritual properties?
Oh my gosh. So I'm going to take it back a little bit back to the supplements, and then I'll get into the food. So why the supplement? So the B vitamin, and one thing I learned through the nutrition school is the B complex. Most people can't, there's about 30% of the population that can't convert B vitamins naturally, right? So if you can't convert B vitamins, you cannot make adequate neurotransmitters, which is your GABA and your serotonin, like those like feel good and relaxing chemicals that naturally happen. And so I can kind of synthesize that, you know, I might be part of that population that couldn't convert B vitamins. So when I started taking that methyl form of B vitamins is when I saw the greatest impact to my mood and even my physical health. So like my PMS decreased drastically when I started taking the B vitamins. And B vitamins are found in food across the board. So like apples, avocados is really prominent in B6. Basically, when you go to whole foods, like foods organically found in nature, that's where you're going to find your healing. So like, if I were to simplify my nutrition advice, it's really like, go back to nature, like cut out all of the noise. And simply eat as close to nature as possible. Like Mother Earth has been providing us with for such a long time, with like, it's been providing us as human beings since our evolution, like since existence. And there's such a reverence and respect that comes with natural food, right? We grow it, we care for it, we nurture it. And then in turn, we consume it and it nourishes us. So it's this like symbiotic, respectful relationship that we have with it. Like food is life, right? You need, and I think you already said that, like you need to consume food to live. Like that's bottom line. However, when we look at like eating disorders and the complexity that go into food, even the complexity that go into food as a culture, like we know that food also has emotional, social, and spiritual components. So food is comfort, right? Like give me a good hot chocolate or a hot bowl of soup, and I'm like, oh, this is the best comfort I could ever get. Food is also social, right? We use it at gatherings like birthday parties, Christmas, holiday festivities, like just even getting together with friends. And then food is used in spiritual ceremonies, which we don't often think about, but I mean, the biggest one that exists in our society is the Holy Communion or Eucharist, right? Which is practiced by all Christians. The offering of bread to represent the body of Jesus Christ, right? So we're using it in our spiritual practices. So the relationships that we as human beings have with food, it's so complex, right? And it's everywhere. But we have to also think about the many healing properties that it also has, which are abundant. So if I take, like you wanted examples of food. So if I take the example of an apple, like just a simple apple in terms of healing, it contains fiber to support our digestive health. It contains quercetin, which is an anti-inflammatory and is also has strong anti-cancer properties. Apples can help detoxify metals in the body, lower blood cholesterol and blood sugar, and it can stabilize blood sugar. Apples also contain a high amount of that B6 that I was mentioning, which is B6. I don't think I mentioned it previously, but is actually known as the anti-anxiety vitamin. So it helps calm us. Mm. So like, that's just one instance of a food staple, the apple. Like if I were to, I could take that apart and do it with a banana or, you know, a leaf of kale.
Right. Anything, literally. It makes me think of when social media started booming, I always would see this hashtag JERF, JERF, just eat real food. And I think it just makes me think of that. The more produce that we have, it feels like the better off we are. I know personally, when I'm incorporating more whole foods into my diet, I am feeling so much clearer. I have less cravings. It seems like it has so many just positive impacts overall. And one of those positive impacts that I didn't even really think about was that my body probably was craving less shitty foods. Honestly, I had less bad cravings. I wasn't going into the hole of behaviors that I used to be trapped in, honestly. So I think that's really powerful. And I love that thinking about, you know, us giving to food and food giving back to us. I live in an apartment in a city. I do not have anything that I'm growing, but I do have houseplants, and it makes me think of that. I've had my houseplants for years. I've been growing those babies, and it kind of just makes me think of that. You know, you feel rewarded by putting your hard work into something.
I mean, those houseplants are detoxifying the air for you, so they're still touching you in a way. And I love it. Yeah. But I would definitely recommend, like, I know you said like celery juice or beet juice or whatever. I don't advocate one particular piece of produce over another. Like, I'm not going to say celery juice is going to cure all. I advocate for all of them. Like, eat the rainbow, have as much color as possible, and just make your plate look Instagram worthy.
Yes. Okay. Actually, we also have that in common, because food is my love language too. And even when I was suffering, I would love to give someone like a beautiful plate of something, even if it was baked goods or anything like that. That's it. If I love you, I'm probably just going to feed you, and that's how I'm going to show you that I love you. So it's funny that you say that. And I love a good aesthetic plate too. So I like the tips of a rainbow plate. You mentioned that when you first started healing, you had kind of immediate, like, reduced PMS, which is huge, reduced brain fog. What else did you see right away that maybe surprised you, that others who are listening to this would be surprised with as well? Like, when you started healing, what was a really positive side effect that you experienced?
I'm not going to talk about physical or mental side effects for this one. What I feel like was the most unexpected but positive thing that happened to me and made me realize like I was on the right path to healing was when I started putting myself first and really advocating for myself. So I mentioned the time that my husband like left me separation papers, and then he came back and we had a conversation. So I remember this like it happened like 30 minutes ago. And this was probably the first instance where I actually advocated for myself. So we were sitting on this like ridiculously ugly couch that I don't know what prompted us to buy it. It was red and pink and white striped. It was the ugliest thing ever. And the cat used to pee on it constantly. So we're sitting on this cat peed ugly couch and he's holding my hand being like, what can I do to help you? How can I help you? What do you want me to do? And I remember saying it very clearly, you can't help me. I have to help myself. Mm-hmm. I have to do this for myself. And I was like, you can hold my hand, but I have to do this for myself. So that was the first instance that I really advocated for myself. Like I was like, I'm worth it. So yeah, that was the first instance of like putting myself first. And if I look back at my healing journey, the biggest impact throughout my healing journey was like times that I put myself first or advocated for myself. So like the second instance that I can think of was none of the stuff that I was doing was working. So I advocated to go into a group mental health program. It wasn't a program for eating disorders. It was just for mental health, right? Like the one-on-one therapy and the outpatient eating disorder clinic I was in, I was like, this doesn't feel right to me. So I'd advocated to go into this group program. And that was where I found the most benefit and tools that were given to me. Another instance where I advocated for myself was, this one was a lot harder to do, but I did it, was asking for a sabbatical from work to like do my healing. So I took 3 months off from work to heal myself. Obviously, at the end of the 3 months, I wasn't 100% healed, but that was like a big piece of the puzzle for me, was taking 3 months for myself and concentrate on the therapies that I needed.
That's huge. It makes me think of, I interviewed a college student recently, and she ended up taking a gap year to get treatment and focus on herself. And it just reaffirms the major need to be putting your mental health first above anything else. And I know it, I didn't do that. And I wish I would have, whether it was in college or even before or after, whatever. I mentioned one time I took a mental health day from work and I felt so guilty for doing that. But I think we really need to hear, if we don't take the time that we need to get better, we're just going to continue to be kind of stuck in place. I'm really happy that for you, that you were able to take the time off work that you needed to. I know it was a sacrifice.
Yeah. And I mean, I definitely, by doing these little things, I flipped the script. I was saying each time I did this, that I was worth it. I deserved healing. Yeah. I deserved more. And I do think when you take care of yourself, I am now a better wife, a better partner, a better employee.
Yeah. And you're, like you said, flipping the script, literally changing your brain, changing your thoughts, showing to your brain that you do show up for yourself rather than the contrary. And the more that your brain sees that you're showing up for yourself, the more you're going to consistently make decisions to continue to show up for yourself. And it seems like that's where you are today. And I just think again about all of these tools that you've been able to use, and tools are so major for me in my recovery. Journaling is one of my biggest tools, meditation, breath work. I do every single day. But again, I also think food and movement, but food seems like it was a salvation for you. And I want to hear more about that, because from the perspective of someone who may still be suffering with an eating disorder, we kind of have to emphasize, and I know this is a major message of yours, is that the eating disorder is never really about food itself. So how can someone suffering change their perception of food?
Not even sure how I changed my perception, but I'm going to attempt to answer this, because the approach to eating disorders, some of the old school approach to eating disorders, is treating the thought process behind food, which definitely was the traditional and conventional approach that I was put in when I went into an outpatient eating disorder program, and did not work for me. I was like a hard no. I was like, I'm not getting down with anything you're saying to me. So eating disorders, and we know this from other people and other studies, that eating disorders are nothing to do with the food. They're more of a way of coping with intense emotions, a way of coping with extreme anxiety or depression, traumas, which I know you've said that's what you think yours stem from, and potentially other issues. Food happens to be the vehicle that is used to cope, right? And because food is the vehicle that is used to cope, that's, like I said, most conventional eating disorder programs, at least in my experience, have tried to take a food-first approach to healing, meaning fixing your relationship with the food versus addressing what is the underlying issue, which the underlying issue for me was perfectionism, anxiety, and depression. So by going to that group mental health program, which actually was focused on giving you tools to deal with anxiety and depression, they taught me tangible tools, like how to cope with negative thoughts, how to reframe my thoughts, breath work and meditation to help address my underlying anxiety and depression. At the same time, I'd enrolled in nutrition school, so I was kind of doing the two in tandem, and I was learning all of those healing properties of food that I had already talked about. So just by getting those tactical skills and learning how to heal from my anxiety and depression, and then, I was also kind of having a new framework, reframing my thoughts on food just by learning the healing properties. So did my, issues with food fall away as soon as I went to nutrition school? Oh, hell no. No, it took time. It took patience. It took integrating all of the stuff that I had learned, both from behavior tactics to help with my anxiety and depression and my thought process on food. So I want to say through my learning about nutrition, my internal script around food naturally had done a 180. So my perception naturally shifted over time. So food no longer became an entity to control or shame myself with, right? But consuming it became an act of self-care and an act of self-love.
You're definitely making me want to go take a nutrition class now, though. I want to learn so much more. I would like you to put your holistic nutritionist hat on, because a lot of my listeners write in sharing their stories with me, and they're similar to pro recovery blogs on Reddit or online that I read, and a lot of people are writing in that are still suffering, that are looking for advice. So I pulled two posts on Reddit that I want to get your advice on. With your background as a holistic nutritionist, I'd like to hear what you have to say and get your thoughts on this. So I'm going to start with the first one. And it says, I just want to start off by saying it's incredibly shameful to think about my eating disorder. I've been struggling since I was 10. I'm a 31 female. And over the years, the binging and purging has not only damaged me physically, emotionally, and spiritually, but also financially as well. I would spend so much money on food. I know every day people struggle with eating out too much, the cost of groceries, etc. But when you have a disorder where you're constantly binging, the financial burden is ridiculous. Imagine spending money on takeout or groceries every day just to purge it later. I did this. The addiction to comfort that food gave me, coupled with the addiction to the purging after, is just awful. The financial burden to feed this disorder over the years honestly makes me so sick. I'm beyond ashamed I let debt rack up from spending money this way. Taking a look back now, I wish I seeked help years ago. I was neglected as a child and made my own meals from a very young age. I think this is where food became my comfort. I was genuinely a fat kid in elementary school. When I developed my eating disorder, food was still my comfort. As I grew into an adult, the stressors of life became worse, and so had my reliance on food. I was thin, miserable, and binging and purging so much. I was spending and spending and spending. I feel like I have a long way to go. I battle with this every day and just need some advice or support. What would you say?
I don't know if I'm going to answer this one from a nutritionist standpoint. I mean, I am a holistic nutritionist, meaning we look at the person holistically, emotionally, mentally, physically when offering suggestions. So for this one, I might answer it from more of a lifestyle than a nutrition response. First, I definitely want to preface because it's mentioned several times that when this person wrote in, shame. No good positive outcome has ever come from shame tactics, whether it's shaming someone else into doing something or shaming ourselves. And I'm not trying to shame this person into stop shaming, but more so that wallowing in our behavior makes the consequences last longer, right? Than the actual physical act, because we're now carrying around this like shame cloud after we've just had our binging and purging episode. So we're carrying it with us. And when I've worked with individuals with binge eating disorders in my practice, the advice that I would give them has been, which has had the best outcomes, is to let go of the shame of that behavior, not to dwell on it. So if it happened, let it go and move on. I know it's so much easier said than done, but that binging and purging happened. Okay, great. Let's concentrate on your next task, your next meal, your next experience, right? Don't go back into the past and keep reliving it or bringing that shame with you. The other thing I want to offer this person is it seems that food is a comfort for them, and comforts can be hard to let go of. We all need comfort in our life. That's just realistic of being a human being. Like, we need comfort. We need support. We're a community. So I guess where I would go is to find something to replace the comfort of food. So try replacing food as a comfort with, you know, getting a hug from a loved one, taking a hot shower or bath, or cuddle with a blanket or a pet. Find something that brings you joy or an activity that you once loved, whether it's, I don't know, if you really loved dancing as a kid or you really loved popping that bubble wrap that came with your like moving stuff or your Amazon box, right? Whatever it is, try and turn to something that you feel authentic to yourself to give you that comfort. Find that new comfort is going to be, it's going to feel uncomfortable and it's going to feel scary at first because this isn't your normal like comforting routine, right? The food is, but the more you do it, the more you prime your brain for the change.
I think that's really good advice. And actually one thing that the listener mentioned is the financial impacts of this disease. And that's something that I actually haven't talked about a lot ever in this podcast, but I was in major debt for a long time, to be honest. I had no control. I think I didn't have control with the eating disorder, and I didn't have control with my finances, and the disorder had a major impact on my finances. And in recovery, I found a place where I've been able to get out of that, but it's another side effect that we just don't talk about. And I really do feel such a different level of control now with myself that I didn't have when I still had the eating disorder behaviors. And yeah, I think listening to your advice, I just think they should be aware that it seems like they're using their eating disorder behaviors to numb. And like you said, if there's something else that they don't need to numb with, but I even find that when I distract myself with art or drawing or something like that, I'm not great, but it definitely like will keep my brain preoccupied. So I really like that. And the next listener is pretty similar, but I'm wondering if you had any different advice. So I'm going to read it. It's a quick one. She just writes in, "Today was the worst day. I had strong urges and spent the day binging and purging. I don't know what to do anymore. I have no motivation to do anything else other than eating. I don't know what to do anymore. Can anyone please help me?" So do you have any like advice on combating the lack of motivation and the urges that they're experiencing?
Oh my God, this feels like, both of these feel like me. Both of these like people that put in, they feel like I'm, you know, 10 years ago, these were me. The best advice I can offer for someone, because I've been there where you're like spending the entire day binging and purging, is to try and break the cycle. So when you feel the urge to like binge and purge, try taking yourself out of your mind and into your body, whether it's like dancing, shaking, screaming, singing, taking a shower, taking a cold shower, like splashing cold water on our face, taking a 5-minute walk. So again, that neuroplasticity of like taking yourself out of the pattern, like you want to pattern interrupt. And each time you pattern interrupt, what you're doing is you're choosing you. So you reinforce that like self-care. The other thing that they're writing about, the lack of motivation, that I'm putting my nutrition hat on for, and it sounds like this person might be also suffering from depression coupled with the eating disorder, which most people with eating disorders, you know, it's very common for them to suffer from depression or anxiety. So maybe working with someone to find the right supplementation like I did to help their body to clear that brain fog and give them back their sense of motivation and purpose.
For someone wondering where to go get that advice, would you recommend more of a holistic nutritionist, a doctor, really any healthcare provider?
I would recommend someone who's trained in supplementation. So generally that would probably be a naturopathic doctor, a functional medicine practitioner. Nutritionists are also trained in supplementation. And so they can offer that the best advice for you. I mean, I can rhyme off what worked for me, but everyone is unique and, you know, different supplements have different interactions with medication. So it would be irresponsible of me to be like, take these 5 things and it will help.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, I'm thinking back to, I only knew that I was lacking in vitamin D because I got blood work done. Is that a common way of, you know, trial and error? Like we can actually read your blood and see what you're deficient in? Or do you think people just, it's more of a trial and error? Like, let's try this supplement and see what it does for you.
There are certain supplements that like, even without doing blood work, that you could recommend just because you know what they do. Like for instance, B vitamins, you need them for every process in your life. So recommending a B vitamin supplement is like a pretty easy recommendation. Recommending something like magnesium. So magnesium is a natural relaxant. In fact, I still take magnesium before I go to bed because it relaxes and calms my body. So people who are prone to anxiety, magnesium is a great one. One that most people don't talk about, and I will definitely caveat this, like big exclamation mark, see a professional before you decide to take this one, was 5-HTP. So 5-HTP is a precursor to serotonin. So you can take, it's basically taking natural serotonin. So it ups your serotonin level, helping with depression.
Yeah, I don't know if I've taken 5-HTP. I feel like I've had a conversation with my doctor about it because I'm interested in everything that you're saying. I think maybe it does have to do with having an eating disorder and understanding this may have impacted my health long term. And I almost want to do like a reversal of negative things I've done to my body over the years. So I want to be as healthy as possible now. But overall, I think I just want to live a more balanced life, behavior free, giving myself what I need in a way of I keep thinking you say food is a way of self-care. That's kind of, I love that approach so much. And that's what I want to try to embody. So I think what you're saying is really empowering for me, but for the listeners as well. So I appreciate that. And to wrap up this segment, I think that you have come so far and I admire you so much. But like you said, 10 years ago, it feels like these Redditors were you at that point. What advice would you give to yourself 10, 15 years ago, knowing what you know now?
Compassion is probably the biggest one. Like, you are a 5-year-old child. Give yourself compassion and allow yourself to be imperfect. Not every day has to be perfect. Not every instance has to be perfect. Do you know what I mean? When you're trying to control your way out of an eating disorder and you fail, you feel like you failed everything. But give yourself the grace to try and the grace to fail. So like when I failed, that actually became a strength for me. When I'd go months without having an episode and then I'd revert back for like a week of bulimic behaviors, right? And I did that for a couple years where I'd be like, you know, 3 months, fine, 1 week, 6 months, 1 week, you know, another 2 months, 1 week. And it was at the end of that cycle, right? Where I'd pick myself back up. I'd be weak and depressed and probably ashamed, but I'd start again. So each time I failed, I had success, right? Recognizing that I don't have to be perfect. I just have to progress. I just have to try.
That's a good one. I really love that. I've been trying to do a lot of inner child healing work and talking to her, and it makes me really think about decisions I've made and how it makes sense when I've made poor decisions or made, you know, decisions that I used to feel shame about. I no longer do. And I accept that as a part of my journey, because I wouldn't be who I am today. I wouldn't have learned as much as I've learned today had I not done that. So like giving yourself grace, giving yourself compassion. I really love that. And I think that's a great way to wrap up this first segment. For segment number two, you've listened to my episodes before, so you've seen these questions. I'm so excited to ask you about them. We're going to start with number one, a recommendation. Obviously, I feel like you have a lot of book recommendations, but I just want any type of recommendation. You have something you're loving, something you think the listeners would love, could be recovery related, could just be something, you know, that you're enjoying in life right now. So what are your recommendations?
Oh my God, I put a lot of thought into this one. Yes. And like I said, I could have done book recommendations. I could have done nutrition recommendations. I could have done like a meditation app, but I went back to the basics and something that I do every day because it grounds me. It's non-negotiable in my day. It happens even in the depths of the winter, and it's walking. It's walking outside in nature. Like, it takes me out of the noise of all of my to-do lists, away from the computer, and offers me a quiet space to just reflect. And obviously being outside, there's the benefit of getting the vitamin D from the sun. And then obviously the benefit of moving, which helps with, you know, bringing that hit of serotonin to help with depression. So walking, it's something my husband and I started doing right when COVID hit and everything was locked down. I was like, I refuse to sit indoors for 24 hours a day. So what we started doing was going for walks after dinner just to be, you know, outside and change the scenery. And now it's become non-negotiable for me. It's like, it has to happen.
You know, now that you say that, I think it's the same for me. I have two dogs and we live in a city, like I said, so I have to take them for walks. We don't have a yard for them to roam around in. And when I don't, we're all taking a hit, right? My dogs are all cooped up and they have less energy. But you saying that, it makes me think, for the listeners who don't know, you're based in Canada. And I also am so glad that I'm remembering this, because I just wanted to say, I love your accent. It's just, there's a little Canadian twang here and there that I can totally tell. I don't know if you hear that ever, but
I do not. And that's the first time I've heard it. My American cousins who probably listen to this will probably like nod in agreement.
It's well, there's a few Canadian influencers I follow, and I notice it's the word about more than anything. Maybe it's you guys have a different way, a boot instead of a about, like I would say. But anyways, I just thought it was so cute. But yes, walking is huge, and I think that's really important because it's getting you out of your burrow almost, especially if you've just had an episode or something like that. Like, I do find that getting out of my head when I was suffering and getting out of the house and just going for a walk is so important, whether it's popping on a podcast and walking or just like sitting outside for a little bit. So I appreciate that one. And
yeah, even popping a podcast because you're listening to someone else's voice and not yours, right?
So yeah.
You just sit in that like shame spiral or let your thoughts get to you because you're listening to someone else's thoughts.
Absolutely. That's a really good recommendation. And I always have podcast recommendations. I'm listening to a ton of on Wondery right now. But anyways, last question is, we both have been on a self-love journey, and I ask the guest every single episode what you love about yourself, because I think it's so important to acknowledge that we do love ourselves. There are things that we need to emphasize that we love about ourselves, because it's another thing with neuroplasticity in the brain. If we're actually actively thinking what we love about ourselves, it makes less room for what we thought we didn't love about ourselves for so long. So I found that emphasizing that point is important. And I just love hearing the different answers that everyone has. So what would you say to that?
Oh, the most cathartic question you can possibly answer. Mm-hmm. My intuition has never steered me wrong. Like, my innate ability to listen to my intuition has led me to amazing things in life. Like, it, every time I listened to my intuition, it advocated for myself during my journey. That led me to amazing discoveries and amazing healing. Like, my intuition has never really steered me wrong. My intuition has led me to adopting my cats. My intuition has led me to like buying our current house. It led me to nutrition. So my innate ability to kind of sit and listen to like my core authentic self has never really steered me wrong. I'm actually going to answer this with a second thing that I love about myself. And the two might be related. My strength. So I have this like core strength, this like core knowing that when I decide on something, it's going to happen and I'll push to make it happen. And it's not, I'm not talking about like the strength to be loud and brash or like, or physical strength, or not even the strength to like stand in a huge auditorium and give this amazing courage to conviction speech. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. It's inner, internal strength that when I tap into it, like it helps me heal. It's able to bring me joy. Like, I can find joy in the little things of life. It allows me to advocate, you know, for those who might need a little bit of my strength.
And you arguably did the hardest thing of your life. So I really, really commend you for coming on and sharing your story. Where can people find you? Also, are you taking clients right now?
I am, but I will also preface that I'm not an eating disorder specialist. So like, I specialize in nutrition for mental wellness, which means I'm helping individuals with anxiety, depression through nutrition. But if someone's in the throes of an eating disorder, I wouldn't recommend like coming to me first. But if you're like, if you're in the throes of an eating disorder and you want to hear more about my story, or you're in the throes of an eating disorder and you need help finding resources, like, reach out to me and I'm happy to just offer my time for that person who needs the support. Even if you're listening to this episode a year or two from now, like however long this episode sits online, if you need
forever
with your eating disorder, and just, I will offer my time to help you. So, but those who are more, you know, I guess in the later part, like they've kind of addressed their eating disorder and they're just looking for nutritional support to keep their mental wellness going. You can find me on Instagram. So it's Nutrition with Angela, or you can find me via my website, which is nutritionwithangela.com.
All right. Perfect. I will link both in the show notes, but yeah, my hope is that this episode lives and it reaches others forever, because I think sadly, while eating disorders will continue to impact the masses, the more that we're talking about it and the more that we're sharing tools that helped us heal, the more other people are going to learn. I think that's my biggest thing is like, if I could go back to Amy in year two of suffering and tell her what Amy knew at year 15 or 16, I think it would have really changed the game for her. So I think your story will really resonate with a lot of the listeners. And I just think, again, you are such a strong and inspirational human. And I'm so glad that we connected. I want to have you on again next season so we can talk more about all the things. I know that you have a lot to say about alcohol use and eating disorders. So this is only just the beginning, but thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Amy, for letting me be part of the journal entry.
Oh, thank you. I love that you signed off like that. All right, everyone, that was Angela McGill. I really enjoyed that conversation. I think we have a lot in common and I could pick her brain for ages. I truly hope this is not the last time that we hear from her on this podcast. So thank you, Angela, for coming on. Thank you to everyone for listening. If you've made it this far, I hope you have a great 2 weeks. I will be back with a new episode then and talk to you soon. This podcast was written and produced by me, Amy Geckel, with music from Coma Media. If you want someone to talk to, you can talk to me, DM me on Instagram at The Eating Disorder Diaries, or email me. Emails in the show notes, as well as all of Angela's links. Thank you again so much for listening, and I'll talk to you in 2 weeks.